Okay, guys, welcome back to episode 2 of the podcast. I appreciate that you guys have both come back.
I'm only here because you promised me it would get better.
And we both know you're only here because you love the sound of your own voice.
You said if I came back, you would stop quite belittling me. Like, just like that. I thought you said it's going to be really funny watching Obi-Wan get annihilated for the next six chapters.
What?
I did say that.
We're going to continue with chapter 2 this week. And after popular demand, let's welcome... Drum roll, please.
Anakin Skywalker.
Anakin? I thought this was the Obi and Qui show.
I think you'll find it's just the Qui show.
Welcome.
Fine, but he's not allowed to speak.
Hey! And he's not allowed to do that either.
He's got your number.
Anakin, if you don't cut it out...
I'm going to put my Veruca foot into your back to bed.
Right, let's get back into the story.
Wait. This is the Qui show. Let's get into this.
Nice place, Alderaan, said Rahara Wig, as the Mareks flew away from the planet. Beautiful. Serene.
Who the heck is this?
You know who this is.
Literally never heard of this person before in my life.
She's important. I got a piece of prime real estate in Alderaan.
Ugh.
What?
Wow. Pretty sure I've overheard you refer to Shmi like that.
Well, this time I'm talking about actual real estate. I'm always flipping houses. It's the Coruscant dream.
Anakin, it was a joke. I know, my grandmaster. But that's my mom you're talking about. Still hurts.
Not to mention I'm suspecting Pax Marifer added with Rimish. I like that on a planet. Good, because it's the last place I want to run into any problems. Why? Pax frowned at her. We'd face far harsher penalties virtually anywhere else. Rahara crossed her arms. Yeah, but on Alderaan, we couldn't bribe our way out of it. They are appallingly moral, aren't they? No place for you and me, Pax smiled mischievously.
Oh, jeez. It's Alderaanians. It's like a planet of Ned Flanders.
I don't really see that as a drawback.
Don't they consider blackjack to be gambling?
It is gambling.
Next you're gonna tell me my Bitcoin investments are gambling.
Sometimes he liked to pretend they were far more criminal than they actually were. Rahara, on the other hand, sometimes liked to pretend they weren't criminal at all. After all, they hurt no one. They took nothing of any value from the worlds they visited. Just rocks. But one planet's rock was another planet's jewel. Take Alderaan, for instance. Its archipelago continent was practically carpeted with a fine, whitish stone that was most often used as gravel. But take that stone to Radia, show it to the Rhodians. Those eyes detected some wavelengths humans didn't, and it became spectacular, iridescent, glittering. It became precious. Millennia ago, back in the days of legend, when the Sith still governed so much of the galaxy, gemstones had been traded freely.
See? The Sith did something right. You know, Milton Friedman was a Sith. All these rules and regulations. People should be allowed to do what they want when they want. There's no harm in that. If I was king, there'd be none of this Food Standards Agency. Oh, what's wrong with a little cholera in your water? Rat poop pie never hurt no one.
Anakin, we said you could do the soundboard. We did not say that you could interrupt.
I'm sorry, my master.
But flooding the market with a precious commodity tended to destroy the commodity's value. Sometimes it led to widespread looting or illicit mining on worlds whose ordinary stone was extraordinary elsewhere. An influx of such jewels could even collapse a planetary economy, so strict rules have been put in place to regulate and even ban the trading of
most. Oh, that was the line for me. Some said it was the worst thing the Sith ever did.
That was the line? What about the village massacres that frequently took place?
Yeah, obviously. No one's saying they weren't bad. But now the economy's going to shit. That affects me.
How you became a Jedi?
She and Pax were simply pretending those rules didn't exist. They couldn't crash an entire world's economy. Not just the two of them. As Pax had said to her when he first hired her as a co-pilot and analyst. Who would be the poorer? No one. So why shouldn't we be the richer? Rahara didn't see why not. It wasn't like they were real crooks. But it was something she had to tell herself, time and time again. These were in some ways an unlikely pair. Rahara had grown up rough, to put it lightly, and taught herself everything she knew, while Pax had been educated by droids with memory banks containing endless data, droids with absolutely nothing else to do.
5 quid on Pax being a robot in the
Clark,
end.
Clark, we know Pax. We both know Okay, fine, I'll take that bet.
She was tall, with golden skin and straight blue-black hair that fell to her waist. Pax was a few centimeters shorter, with wiry hair that sprang up from his head as though he'd been electrocuted, and a complexion so pale, the stranger sometimes asked if he was from a planet where the population lived underground.
Yeah. Remember we used to call him the Milky Bar Kid and hiss when he stepped in the sun.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why he never spoke to us again.
His clothes were of the finest quality, but disheveled, and hung slightly on his skinny frame. Rahara wore plain black working garb she bought on the cheap from the spaceport stalls, which could be made to look local almost anywhere, with the addition of a simple cape or hood. They were both human, and that was where the similarities ended. Most people write us off as an absent-minded scholar and as low-class pilot, Rahara thought.
Yeah, people used to do the same about me and you, quite remember.
What?
Moving on.
Well, which one of us is the absent-minded scholar?
That was fine by her. The important thing was that they be written off, overlooked, forgotten. She spent her childhood being monitored, being controlled. Rahara would never allow that to happen again. Carrying the gems, Rahara stalked over to the other side of the hold, where the spectrometer bench sat. I'd have thought you'd have learned how to interact with other human beings by now, instead of suggesting everyone in the galaxy is a moron, besides you. Looks like we're both disappointed. She laid the stones on the bench and began separating them by size and probable quality.
I thought this book was about us. Why is there so much on these guys?
I think they're a metaphor.
A metaphor for what?
For our relationship.
Not everything's a metaphor.
You can clearly see the similarities.
Rahara had first been put to work sorting minerals when she was only 9 years old. To her, this was almost automatic. Rahara, Peck said more quietly. I'm sorry if
I don't remember you ever apologizing to me. It's the kind of thing I would remember.
Oh, I apologize to you all the time. You're just too sensitive. Grow a thicker skin, like a viceroy. Like rhino slugs they were. You could insult them all day.
Name one time you ever apologized to me.
I don't remember every time.
I'm not asking for every time. I'm asking for one time.
Just because I can't remember off the top of my head doesn't mean it didn't happen. Actually, when I truncheoned your leg, I distinctly remember saying, I'm sorry if the thing you think I did hurt your feelings.
See, then that's exactly it. That's not an apology. You're deflecting the criticism.
I meant it as a joke. Rahara, Pax said more quietly, I'm sorry if I hurt you. I meant it as a joke. He hadn't hurt her, merely irritated her. But that was bad enough. Sometimes she got weary of a partner who acted more like a protocol droid than a human being, even if he did have a good excuse. Or do you see anybody laughing? I do not. Obviously, my understanding of humor requires refinement. And that, of course, made her chuckle. Pax was funniest when he didn't try.
Sounds like someone else we know. Charlie.
I'm a professional stand-up comedian.
Every white guy who's ever been told they were funny think they're a stand-up comedian.
Been paid for it.
20% off at the bar is not getting
Don't paid. Make me get the coupon. And it was 25%.
We ought to talk, Pax said as Rahara strapped on her magnifying goggles, about our next destination. Gamor, right? Which would be disgusting. But at least they could call on their fresh memories of Alderaan to get them through the weeks of dredging fetid swamps. So excited about that. You're being sarcastic. Let me assure you that this lack of enthusiasm is entirely mutual. The thing is, I've been thinking. Pax leaned closer, peering down his long nose at the white gravel on the bench. We can collect Gamorrean and Coral any time. But what if we went after something rarer, rather more valuable? Like what? Mustafar fire diamonds? Rahara had never been to Mustafar. But from what she heard, it would make working on Gamor seem like a journey to paradise. Nothing so dangerous. He half turned her face to her as he said, kyber crystals.
Were they?
Such a flattering.
Quite, oh my God. That's true, but quite.
Kyber? In that? Rahara pushed her goggles atop her head, the better to look him in the eyes. The Jedi police kyber trading like, well, more closely than anything we've ever traded. Or anything we ever should trade. Yet a black market still exists, as well as certain industrial applications. And if no industry will buy from us, and the markets in question are rather too black for our comfort, well, we could alert the Jedi to a new trove of kyber. Make them friends that could come in handy someday. Having friends among the Jedi.
Trust me, the Jedi are only interested in looking after themselves.
What was that?
Nothing.
Stick to the soundboard, boy.
That made more sense. Still, kyber isn't found in that many places. The Jedi control those areas. Are you seriously suggesting we try to steal from them? Pax scoffed. Please, I'm not suicidal. I'm daring.
Wait, did the Jedi kill for kyber?
I suppose you don't ask questions to answers you don't want to... if you don't want them to answers to.
Okay. Well, like, where do our taxes go?
I'm also the person who might have just found a completely undiscovered kyber source. On the moon of a perfectly safe world, even. No guards, no danger, a pleasant climate. And if my analysis is correct, a very large number of kyber crystals. Rahara has seen Pax combing through various planetary scans for hours on end. All public information, yet too minute and dense for most people to search through without already knowing what they were looking for. But he saw more than others did. She said, I knew there was a reason I put up with you. A grin spread across Pax's face. Then let's hunt some kyber. Traveling home proved awkward. Obi-Wan was obviously hoping to avoid talking about what had gone wrong during the firefight on Terrace.
Now we're back. This is what the people really want.
No wonder, for someone so young. In many ways, Obi-Wan was so mature for his age, so steady, that Qui-Gon sometimes forgot he was just 17 years old.
Oh. Thanks, Qui.
Oh, thanks, Qui. Look, maybe I was a bit too harsh on you last time. It just got a bit much, the constant snide remarks.
No, it's okay. Thanks. You were actually okay back then.
Yeah. It could have been worse. I mean, they were difficult years. And I was a bit insecure about my ungainly appearance.
I appreciated that you always knew never to touch that.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't. That's too far.
Only in moments like this, as they sat side by side in the cockpit of a Rainhawk class shuttle, did Qui-Gon realize how gawky his Padawan still was.
Oh, what the actual force?
Oh, force off, Obi.
You can't get angry at me for thought
crimes. I can, and will.
Max being tried in the Thought Hague for thinking his teenage Padawan had not quite grown into his body yet. Master Qui-Gon
literally never said one bad thing about you ever.
It was a compliment. Some women only go for gawky men.
Name one.
Peter Crouch's wife. She's the model. She's hot, right? Snoop Dogg.
How both the past child and the future man could be glimpsed in his face. As always, during these moments, Qui-Gon felt a pang of guilt. Obi-Wan has such potential. Such promise. He deserved a master who could bring it out in him. There'd been an uneasy match from the start. Misunderstandings and emotional swings.
Oh, if I remember correctly, the emotional swings came from one person in
particular. I don't think someone getting slightly annoyed because you always left the lights on whenever you left the room. Despite being asked politely not to, warrants emotional swings.
Well, no, but lightsabering all the switches off because if I can't respect light, I don't deserve it. Very much does.
I think we'll have to agree to disagree. Qui-Gon sometimes questioned why Padawans were transferred from the crash to their masters in the middle of most species' adolescence. Exactly when every change became more difficult.
It was. It was difficult. I don't want to hear any more about Obi-Wan's pubes.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Never shut up about
he, that. He, like Dooku and Yoda, Yoda's old master before him, had taken a younger Padawan. Obi-Wan had become his apprentice at 13. This had not helped. Qui-Gon had talked things through with fellow masters such as Mace Windu and Depa Balaba, even Yoda, all of whom assure Qui-Gon that the initial months were almost always rough. Worry you should if conflict arises not, Yoda had intoned. Think growing enough your Padawan cannot be. Had Qui-Gon's first months with Dooku been so different?
Yes. Yes, they had. Care to elaborate?
Well, me and Dooku's, we just got each other.
We would stay up late, him braiding my Padawan tail, me baking cookies, and, you know, just hanging out. You never wanted to bake cookies because you were concerned for my blood sugar.
Different ways to show affection, my master.
I'll braid your hair if that's really what you want.
It's not the braiding. I want you to want to braid it.
But he had forged a powerful bond with Dooku well before they'd been together for a year. Most masters and apprentices did. Yes, Rael had helped at first, but he and Dooku would have come together regardless. It was Dooku who had guided Qui-Gon to the ancient Jedi prophecies, igniting interests in ancient history and linguistics.
It was? Things are making a lot more sense now.
I obviously didn't know he was evil at the time.
Besides that, they'd shared so many personality traits, self-reliance, skepticism, and a reluctance to take the Council's word as sacred.
Again, I'm not sure these are traits you want to be sharing with a Sith Lord.
The characteristics he and Dooku had in common were almost entirely the ones for which he and Obi-Wan were exact opposites.
I'm not sure that's the insult you once thought it was.
Oh no, I have the exact opposite traits of a Sith Lord.
You are such a rule follower, Obi-Wan.
Qui-Gon believed in dealing with each situation on its own merits. Obi-Wan wanted procedures to follow. Qui-Gon valued flexibility, which Obi-Wan seemed to think of as sloppiness.
Oh, sue me for wanting some legislation and standardization for when I got my kidney
out. I told you, procedures kill more people than they save.
You're thinking of seatbelts. Right, once again, being horrified at you doing kidney surgery with no medical training and a needle phobia is not deviating from standard protocols.
And how do you want me to get over my phobia, Obi-Wan?
Hypothermia? I think you mean hypnotism, my grandmaster.
What's hypothermia, then?
You're cold. Very cold. Like Anakin in space.
I got over that. With a jumper.
Qui-Gon had learned to get on better with the Council over time, but had always retained his independence. Obi-Wan still thought he had to obey the Council in every particular, at all times, and was horrified every time Qui-Gon deviated from standard protocols in the slightest. None of this made Obi-Wan a bad candidate to become a Jedi Knight. Many Jedi Knights, some of the best, thought and acted along the same lines. But it made him an awkward match for Qui-Gon. Years into their partnership, they still remained out of sync.
I say potato, you say.
Had the situation been more dire today, if the threat in the Hutt Palace had been more serious, that gap in their mutual understanding could well have gotten them killed. How do I fix this? Qui-Gon wondered. Can I? Obi-Wan deserves no less. I'm sorry about before, Master. Obi-Wan finally said. I should have understood what you meant by getting the door and letting myself get caught stealing a ship. Obi-Wan, the fault was mine. Qui-Gon laid one broad hand on Obi-Wan's shoulder.
It didn't happen often, but on those days when you apologized, took accountability, I really felt like we connected.
Yeah, well, you were a sucker.
What? You didn't mean it?
I meant it, but in a way, a dog doesn't really mean it when it says sorry with those eyes, when it's just done a poo in your fresh washing basket.
First, I gave you unclear instructions, and a better master could have taught his Padawan to understand his battle instincts by now. And I knew you probably wouldn't be able to get a ship all by yourself. It was worth a try, that's all. You're not to blame.
Mm. Well, that's a backhanded compliment.
Oh, it's my fault you're such a bumbling fool.
That's a nice thing to say, is it?
It's not nice.
Most Padawans will be relieved to be off the hook. Obi-Wan only frowned. I can do better. Qui-Gon sighed. We both can. Now let's get home.
On the planet Pijal, beneath the blazing sunset, the race was on. Come on, shouted Rael Avacry, urging his mount onward towards a wide gash in the ground, deep and stony. The Varactyl chirruped as it sprang forward, crossing the chasm at one bound. As his heavy clawed feet settled onto the grass, Avaraz laughed out loud. Come on, shouted Rael Avaraz. Avaraz laughed out loud. There we go, he cried in his thick Ringo Vinden accent. That's it. Viractyls had been imported from Utapau. By now, those original creatures had been bred into streamlined, swift, crimson-feathered Viractyls, unique to Pijal. Someday, Avaraz figured, the rest of the galaxy would discover the Pijal Viractyls, and after that, no one would ever raise feathers again. For the time being, however, these creatures, their speed, the sheer joy of riding them, belonged to Pijal alone. Avaraz sighted the finish beacon, and silently directed his Viractyl toward it. The beast responded instantly, accelerating with every bit of its strength to reach the end as fast as possible. His mount trilled its battle cry as it dashed past the line, skittling to a stop so fast its claws cut sharp lines in the loamy ground. With a grin, Avaraz reached into the gear basket and grabbed a large stick of mollusk jerky.
Mollusk jerky.
A Pijal delicacy he couldn't stand. The Viractyl appreciated the stuff more, chewing with relish. Other riders reached the line, shouting their congratulations and friendly taunts as they did so. Avaraz hopped to the ground as they began leading their Viractyls back to the palace stables. He shook his head ruefully just after he landed. Next to him, Captain Darren, stoic as ever, asked, is it a problem? I'm just wondering why my knees are rude enough to age along with the rest of me. You could get synthetic replacements. No big deal. You know what they say about getting old. It beats the alternative.
People always said that, but I really like being a ghost. Don't need to go to the toilet, disappear when people are boring you. All the people worth talking to are in the afterlife anyway. All the good ones.
Who? Kiadi. Plo Koon.
Yeah. Who's Plo Koon?
You serious?
Ah, Popcorn Head.
Yes. Popcorn Head.
Avaraz tried to remember that. Forge knew he'd seen so many people fall before their time. If sometimes in the morning he looked at himself in the mirror and wondered who that graying old geezer was, well, that was just proof he wasn't dead yet, and he intended to live his remaining life to the fullest. Once they reached the stables, the servant boys took the Viractyl's reins from the riders and walked the beasts off for dust baths and feed. Darren and some of the other soldiers went back to their barracks afterward, but Avaraz led the larger group to the nearest cantina. It wasn't exactly palatial, a mighty hole carved out of a dingy rock, which smelled a fair bit like the Wookiee bartender.
Yeah, I know that
smell. Stop looking at me.
Ah, you were 17, in fairness. Most 17-year-olds smelled like a damn Wookiee that's been baking in two suns.
But that was the one reason Avaraz liked the place. The customers gave a cheer of welcome as he strolled in, and the hostess, Selby, who had blonde hair, and a saucy smile, and large breath.
What is this? What are we reading? This is taking a turn. Are these your thoughts, Kwai? Is that how you see women?
No, sorry, I was just describing the image I saw here. Gave him a warm smile as he took his long cloak. The rider closest to Avaraz leaned in and muttered, the two you back on, then?
Wait, what's he implying?
Maybe. Avaraz didn't indulge in female companionship often. When people found out about it, they got distracted. Made a fuss. It often wasn't worth it. But it had been a while, and Selby was decently close to his own age, and she had the bawdiest sense of humor of anyone he'd ever met. Why not, he figured.
This is against the Jedi Code. I'm beginning to think no one actually listens to it.
Oh, you're no saint. Or should I say, saintine?
Oh, you don't even know what happened.
I do.
No, you just spread rumors.
I'm gonna clear my name.
Why not, he figured. Might as well see if she was game. He gestured towards Selby, and she lit up as he began moving toward him. Hey, grunted a gigantic Chagrian, who was obviously already drunk. His grayish-blue hand clutched Selby's elbow. I was talking to her. Get along, then. You've had enough. Or throw me out now, for that. With his free hand, he gestured vaguely in Avaraz's direction. He must be new here. Selby pulled herself free. Nobody keeps me. I keep myself. This only made him angrier. Who do you think you are? Turning down the likes of me when you're trash. Nothing but trash. It was obvious Selby didn't care what insults the Chagrian hurled at her. But that didn't mean Avarash shouldn't step in. Besides, he'd enjoy it. Hey, you, he said to the Chagrian. Get out before I take you out. The Chagrian's chest swelled. If he couldn't get himself a woman, he seemed to think a fight would be the next best thing. Take me out, huh? And how do you think you'll do that? In a blink, Avaroth's hand went to his belt, seizing his weapon. His lightsaber blazed into life, his blue glow illuminating the entire room. The Chagrian froze as the cantina fell silent. Avaroth grinned. A bit I could manage. Jedi, muttered the Chagrian. Although he was shuffling back towards the door, he had bowed. I didn't know. You don't look like a Jedi. Huh? Avaroth said. I always figured other Jedi don't look like me. I'll report you. The Chagrian shook his horns. As close as he could get to being threatening now. As close as he could get to being threatening now. Jedi or not, your answer Jedi or not, you're answerable to the law.
Ha ha ha, joke's on him.
What? You know we are answerable to...
Answerable to what?
To the law, to the Senate, to democracy.
Wait, seriously?
Yes.
The whole time?
Uh-huh.
So if, hypothetically, a Jedi was to, I don't know, set fire to their Jedi quarters to claim the insurance money to help with their crippling gambling debt, that wouldn't be okay because they're a
Jedi.
Well,
yes. Because that's a crime. Jedi or not.
Right. And if they were to receive some kind of financial incentive to kind of maybe just look the other way while someone's clearly dealing death sticks in the back of my speeder.
Yes. That should go without saying.
If that wasn't... Even if that wasn't a crime, just morally, you shouldn't do that.
And if you're on an elevator and someone is coming and they say, hold the doors, and you pretend to push the button, but you're actually pushing the button for the doors to close faster. But you look at them and you're saying, oh, sorry, I don't know what's happening, but I'm trying.
Well, no, not a crime as such, that one. But yeah, it's frowned upon.
Oh, okay. Well, that's...
But the other thing, they were definitely crimes.
Oh, it's okay, I'm dead. What are they going to do? Throw my ashes in jail?
You said hypothetical.
Wait. Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, hello, Coruscant police officer.
We have an arrest warrant here for one Qui-Gon Jinn's ashes.
So that's the end of chapter 2. What's everyone thinking?
So, I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty confused with what's happening. And I was there.
Nah, we're only 2 chapters in. In all seriousness, there's not really that much to catch up on. You've been introduced to the characters and... All you need to take from it is that Qui-Gon does not like Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan is a whiny little wolf.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was getting.
You're a real nasty piece of
work. Oh, don't blame me.
I didn't write it. Or think it.